Our speaker today is David Gowan, branch manager for Atlantic Bay Mortgage Group. David has been in the mortgage industry since 1986. He has experience in all three phases of the industry: correspondent, wholesale, and retail. He started his career in the consumer finance industry, where he managed 8 offices in 3 different states over an 8-year period. His specialty was turning around failing offices. In 1994, he started working in the wholesale correspondent side of the industry, with one exception in the early 2000s until 2007. During that time, David worked for 3 of the nation's largest lenders of the non-prime sector: Ford Consumer Finance, Conti Mortgage, and Mortgage Lenders Network. While at Conti Mortgage, David was responsible for buying loans in bulk from lenders in 11 southeastern states and was the number one outside sales representative at the firm. After a brief market correction, he opened his own mortgage firm, The Mortgage Stop, with a college friend for 3 years. When the wholesale market became more favorable, he joined his same friend from college at a firm called Mortgage Lenders Network. Today, with many of their friends and associates, they helped the company grow from $10 million a month in production to over $400 million over a 5-year period. Since the market crash of 2007, David has worked in the retail side of the industry, where he helps individual consumers with home loans. He started another retail mortgage company in 2007 that was later sold to Brand Mortgage, a division of Brand Bank. He is now with Atlantic Bay Mortgage, a 20-year-old Virginia Beach mortgage lender, helping them expand their presence into the Georgia market. David has been a Polo resident since 2004 and was married for 18 and a half years to Lori, who tragically passed away in 2014 from a long fight with heart disease. He has 2 children, Grant and Julia. He is now happily remarried to Alice, Allie Miller Gowan, and just celebrated his 1-year anniversary in October. In his spare time, he supports his son's teams in football and baseball. He is an active member of Coming First United Methodist Church, where he works on the financial committee and serves as a greeter. David is very involved with his family and has often been had something on Saturday with his family, which is the right priority. But this time, it just worked out that he was able to speak. So it's great to have David speak today. Please welcome David Gowan.
Morning, everybody. Morning. Based on some of the speakers he's had, I don't know why he's got me up here, but it's okay. Hines and I have known each other for a number of years, and he knew my late wife, and I think he wanted me to talk a little bit about that. And I'll tell you, when he called me to talk to me about doing this, I thought about what I would speak about. And, you know, most people who've come here and I've heard speak here talk a lot about their career, and I will talk about that a little bit. But I also want to talk about, even though this is not a faith-based group, I do want to talk about some of the things that I've gone through, and it may help some of y'all if you've gone through any tragedy or if you go through tragedy, because I think my theme would be that I've had both a career and a life of some highs and some lows, and I think that all during that time, I realized that your family, your friends, God has always been there helping me, and it's meant a lot to me. Growing up, I grew up in South Georgia on the coast, a little town called Folkestone. It's about 2,000 or 3,000 people live there. It's about the size of Gwinnett County, but there's only 10 or 12,000 people in the whole county. So I grew up in a very rural area, had a great childhood, have a large family. And when I say large, I mean hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people. But, you know, great, great family. Grew up in the Methodist Church, and was very active in that growing up. So God has always been a big part of my life. And I went to Georgia Southern in Statesboro, Georgia, which is, you know, about 4 hours south of here, if any of you haven't heard of it. But great college. They're a lot bigger than when I went there. Probably about 6,000 or 7,000 people. Now they have about 23,000 people. But I got a degree in business management. But what I didn't realize, even when I graduated from college in 1984, is when you're graduating from college with a management degree and you're 22 years old, nobody's going to let you manage their company. So kind of a little bit of a shock there. And for all you people, you know, talking about Reagan was a great president. I was glad he's the president. But 1980, 1984 is not really a great time to get a job. So I moved to Atlanta with some of my fraternity brothers and had a great time and everything, but it just wasn't a good time. I had a little piddling jobs, you know. And 1986, early 85, my father asked me to come home and help him run some of his businesses. So I thankfully did that, and it was really great for a couple of years. And like most men, I had a change, and the change was I met a lady, and she was living in Atlanta. So I moved up to Atlanta in 86, and that's when I started, in the career that I have now. And I kind of got in it by default. I was looking around for a job and before I moved up here, and one of my friends from college, she helped me with a recruiter. She knew a recruiter, and she was telling about this guy she was trying to help. She goes, "Oh, my goodness, I know that guy. You know, I dated one of his fraternity brothers, and I'd roomed with his best friend from high school, so you need to hire that guy. He's all right." So I got in the business, and when I started it out in my career, I was I worked in the consumer finance industry, and any of you don't know what that is, it's basically you're doing small loans, you're doing car loans, you're doing furniture loans, you're doing mortgages, you do everything. And you also have to collect the people. So you have to, I've done some of that before, like, you know, where's the money? But I did that for about 8 years, and I worked in three different states and did really well. My nickname was Rambo, because I was one of those guys who would just go in there and take out the enemy. The enemy was people who wouldn't pay, so I was really good at that. One time I had to go over to Alabama. That's when I was telling Chuck earlier. I had to go over to Alabama. The EVP of our company, he says, "We got this office in Alabama. It needs to be turned around. And I need you to go over there, David. I need you to fire everybody over there as soon as possible." And so I was like, you know, that sounds kind of bad, you know. So I went over there, and there wasn't anything wrong with the people. They just need to be, you know, supported and managed and all. And I remember in 1 year, we turned around the office almost $600,000 in profitability in 1 year. Because it was a loss, and we turned it into a profit. And after I left there, several years later, three of the people that I had worked with had been promoted, and one of them to a higher level than I ever got at the company. And so I was like, you know, sometimes when things look bad, it's not always that bad, you know. I thought that was the most terrible thing in the world, to go over there and tell all these people that I have to let them go, and I didn't do it. And you know, I got rewarded for it in numerous ways. But I have always had people helping me. When I was in college, I made a lot of good friends. I was in a Delta Tau Delta fraternity at Georgia Southern, and it helped me. I was from a small town. I didn't really do much. I was mostly working. My family had a lot of businesses, and I was really hardworking and didn't do much socially. I had a girlfriend in high school, so I didn't really do a whole lot of stuff. So when I went to college and got in this fraternity, it really brought me out. I was in leadership positions. I became a student senator at school and all this kind of stuff. So it really helped me out a lot. And one of my friends that I met in college became my roommate. His name is Richard. And he and I and a couple of friends, we really helped each other over the years. And so I've always had people, because things I've done, they've helped me. And when I got up here to Atlanta and I started working, I got in that industry, and this guy was in the military. He was in 24th Mechanized. He got out of military. He didn't have anything to do, so I helped him get a job, and it paid off because I helped him, and then later on he helped me a couple of times. But when I moved back up here to Atlanta, it was when I started in this business. Now, like, it was crazy. It was a crazy business. About 1994, I had moved from Nashville down to Atlanta, and I really didn't like that industry anymore. It was a tough business. It paid pretty well, but it was a pretty tough business. So my buddy Richard, he helped me get a job in the wholesale and correspondent side of the business, and that was a great change for me personally, because it was more money and it was a lot more professional, and you had an upward ceiling was a lot higher than what the other industry was. Around that time, I started dating my wife, Lori, that Hines, and Chuck know, met Lori. And we started dating, and we got serious, and we got married in 1996. And after that, in 98, my daughter was born. And those were high times for me. At that time, I was working for this company, and I was an outside sales rep. and I had an 11-state territory. And I remember there was one stretch in 98 where I was the highest paid employee in the whole company. They didn't like that. I was some little South Georgia boy, you know, making more than the president of a big, you know, major corporation. And they didn't like that too much. So, I don't know if any of you remember the Russian ruble crisis in 1998. It caused a big problem in the mortgage industry. And, at that time, I stopped doing that and did some other things because it really wasn't conducive to do it at the time. So I was at a point in my life where I was married, had a kid, top of the world. All of a sudden that happened, and I was like, you know, what am I going to do now? You know, so I started a company. Me and my buddy Richard, we started a company, and we did pretty well for a couple of years. And, you know, at that point, the business that I was in was starting to get a little bit better, so I got back in it. And in 2002, my son was born. But when my son was born, my wife got a condition called postpartum cardiomyopathy. And what that means is cardiomyopathy is a condition where your heart muscle is not strong enough to squeeze out all the blood. And what happens is in some people, it causes you to have a fluid backup. And initially, that's what it was with her. And they just treated her with medicine and everything went pretty good. So now that we got around that, she almost died at the point of 2002. So I was 40 years old, had a wife, I was adored, and always wanted a son. And so she gave me a son, but she almost died doing it. So that was a good, it was good that I had a son. It was bad that my wife was ill. And she did really well for a couple of years. And, during that time that she was doing pretty well, it was one of probably the highlights of my career, because my buddy and I, Richard, and a bunch of our friends, like the best man from my wedding, worked for me. Another guy that was in my wedding. So I had like two guys from my wedding on my team and probably 10 other people that I knew really, really well. And we built this company that we're working at from like $10 million in production, which, you know, that's not big in the mortgage industry because, you know, the average loan size is a pretty good size. But before the crash, it was doing like almost $400-something million a month. So we were all making money hand over fist. Everybody was happy, you know, and it was just like top of the world. But honestly, even though I was making a lot of money and everything was going good, I did miss out a lot on some of my family, being with my family, my children and stuff. So it was worth it, I guess, to a certain degree, but if I had to do it over again, I probably wouldn't. When the crash happened in 2007, I had three companies that I worked for went bankrupt in a year. And at that point, I said, maybe this is a different part of the business. I can't get out of the business. I've been doing this since I was 20-something years old. So I just decided to get into the retail side of the business, which is helping consumers get loans directly. It's a little safer than the other part. So I did that. And about that, probably a year and a half later from the crash, is when my wife started getting worse, and she got really bad to the point where she almost died in 2009. And finally, in 2010, she was on death's doorstep, and they put a heart pump in her, and it pretty much saved her life, and she was able to live another 4 years. But during that process, have any of you ever been a caregiver for a person, like somebody really, really ill? Any of y'all have ever done that before? If you have, you have, I know. And you know what it's like. It's one of the toughest things you'll ever do. And I'll tell you, if it wasn't for my faith in God, I would have been a bitter, angry person. But I've always felt real close to God, and especially during that time frame. So, you know, it's just one of those things where you just have to have faith that He has a plan that, you know, it's going to be okay. So she, in 2014, it got to the point where she really couldn't keep that machine in her, and they decided to try to take it out. And they took it out, put a new one. That didn't work. She kept getting infections. And finally, in 2014, in August, she passed away. And, it was really tough. I mean, really tough. But I had a lot of family and a lot of friends help me. And my church helped me. And so having that feel, neighborhood feel, a lot of people in the neighborhood helped out, got meals and everything. And so it was one of those things where you know that people have your back. You know that you have people, and you know you have God. So I know a lot of people who've lost their spouse and lost children, and they become very bitter and angry. And I never did that because I figured, who am I to question God's plans? And also, my wife, she told me, you need to take this. This is the way it is, and we're going to be okay. The kids are going to be okay, and I want you to go on with your life and all this sort of thing. And so it gave me great comfort for her to say that. I don't know if any of you have ever experienced this personally, but they say that there's angels on the earth, and if there was an angel on the earth, and my late wife was one of them because she was a pediatric nurse. She took care of people. After she was ill, she still took care of people. She volunteered at the hospital. She did all these great things up to right to the last. And probably when you really want to see the hand of God at work is you have people come into her in the hospital and be administered to. That, to me, was the most powerful thing that happened in all that, is people coming to her and her giving them words of wisdom or her helping them out. So I've really seen, how God can help us in our lives real close, you know. The things that I've learned along the way is that in my life and my career is that you always got to keep family and friends and God around you. Because if you are in a situation where you really need help, if you've been kind to people, if you've been helpful to people, and if you are doing the right things, then God will take care of you. It may not seem like that sometimes, or you might not like what's going on, or you might question, well, why did this happen, you know? But at the end of the day, I've always had help from friends and family because I've always tried to help people. You know, it's not always, I'm not perfect. I mean, I make a lot of mistakes, but I always try to help people, and treat them good. So after my wife died, I was crushed, and I decided that I would take her advice and I just wouldn't sit around and mope. I did that for a little bit, but not long at all. And I met my current wife, Allie, right not too long after she passed away. And some of the people, you know, were a little taken aback. So I called a couple of my family and a couple of my friends, and I said, "What should I do? I met this wonderful lady," and some of my aunt told me, she goes, "I think when you look at the contract on the marriage, it says till death do you part. And if your wife's passed away, you're okay to carry on with your life." And I did. And I met Allie. And so if you're talking about, you know, to go from having a wife, or I knew her for 25 years and we're the best friends, and to lose her and to think that how are you going to go on? You know, I got two kids, 12 and 16 at the time. How am I going to go on? I meet this lady, Allie, my current wife, and she's a former nanny. Lost her mother at 21 years old. She's in the customer service center. She's very good at diffusing tense situations. So to meet a wonderful, beautiful, sweet, loving woman who's a former nanny and who is great with people, my children instantly fell in love with her as I did. And so, you know, I've gone from that low to having, you know, a wonderful life with a beautiful woman who is crazy about me. And so, you know, I don't know that that's payback for all the good things I did when I was taking care of my wife, but certainly feels like it to me. My son is really, like Hines would say, my son is really busy. He's a football player and a baseball player, and he'd be two or three other things if I'd let him, but that's enough. So we've gone a lot, dealing with that, and I'm either helping coach, helping support him. His football team at the Vickery Creek Middle, they just won the football championship for the county. So that was a pretty big highlight. And we, me and a bunch of guys, we helped do the field and also did concession stands. So that was really nice to be a part of that season. And in baseball, he's a lefty like me, and he's really good in baseball. And he's been doing that since he was four. So that takes a lot of time, too. When he plays travel baseball, so any of you got kids that's ever played baseball, especially if they play at a high level, that's a lot of games. Sometimes, you know, 40, 50 games a year, maybe more this year. But I do that, and then I'm involved in my church. I've married two women in my life, and both of them been Methodist. And I'm not trying to be an advocate for Methodism, but I can tell you that having someone that's the same faith as you and has the same faith journey you have has been very helpful. When I met my current wife, she's from West Virginia. I've never dated a woman from lived anywhere except the South. And so I was a little taken aback when she told me where she's from. But after talking to her, I realized that she grew up in a small town just like me, as a Methodist, just like me. And the family dynamics were shockingly similar. When I mean that, it's like grandparents live in the same town. The other side of the families, commingled together and all that sort of stuff. So it wasn't as big a shock knowing that someone grew up just like you. So my son told me the other day, he goes, Dad, I told Chuck this when I came in. My son told me the other day, he goes, Dad, how did you get so lucky is to have two, wonderful women in your life? I said, it's not luck. Him helping me out. So, I think one of the reasons that, like I said, that Hines wanted me to speak today is tell you that if you ever have bad things happen to you, it can be better. And if you think you've had a bad time, probably somebody else has had something worse. And if you see somebody on the street you don't recognize and you think they're down and out, say hello to them. I learned that from a guy who came to speak at our church one time. He was at Emory, and he was in the theological college or whatever. And he says, a lot of people, especially in this political scene, you've heard a lot of rhetoric about immigrants and foreigners and stuff. He goes, do you know what kind of courage it takes for somebody to come here and to leave their whole family and to start a new life? Nobody wants them to come in illegally or do anything wrong. But at the end of the day, there could be someone here that moved here from New York that don't know a soul. You know what I mean? And maybe he needs just somebody to say hey to him. So I would encourage you that if you've had bad times, to know that it can be better. And if you see somebody that needs to be said hello to, say hello to them and ask them, how are you doing? If they're from somewhere else, ask them about it. Let them tell you about, where they came from and their journey, because it might make their day. So that's something I've always tried to do is just reach out to people, talk to people, and find out where they're at in their life, because it certainly helped me over my life and my career. And I'll just end with this, is that I appreciate Hines letting me speak. It's a great neighborhood. It's a great area. In 1988, this county was looked at by most of Georgia and some people in the world as one of the most racist, backward places in the world. In 1989, an organization called Leadership for Sight started. There's leadership programs in all these different counties, but it started in 89. I graduated in 2008, 2009 class, and the whole purpose of it is to build community leaders, to build bridges between different factions in the area, and to build people who will help, in the community. And so, this county, though, is one of the best places in America to live. Got the highest per capita income in Georgia. Got a lot of great faith-based programs here, a lot of great churches, a lot of great jobs. So we should all feel incredibly lucky to live in this area. This is one of the best places to live in the United States. And that means it's one of the best places in the world. So I'm extremely lucky to be here. And even though I've had a lot of highs and lows in my career and my life, I'm glad to be here and I'm happy. And I'm moving forward. So thank y'all for having me.
Any questions?
Yes, sir.
My story is I was married the first time in the last year.
Yeah.
I was 56 years old when my first wife died.
Mm-hmm.
And I was single for 4 years and I met another lady. And,
mm-hmm.
And she was from Westchester County in New York.
Uh-oh.
Anyway, we've been married for 26 years.
Mm-hmm.
And my story is that some men go through life and don't get a good woman, and I got two.
I'm with you, brother. All right, thank y'all.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you. Great. Yeah, Arthur shared his story. There's a CD on there if you want to hear his talk too. And thanks, David, for sharing. One of the things that I believe telling your life story helps. It reminds you, as David shared, of the blessings that you've had, and in spite of the ups and downs in life, to focus on the good things. And it also is a way that you can be a resource for someone else that may be going through something similar, that nobody else can understand what you're going through except somebody that's already gone through it.
And I think that's something that's very important. A lot of people won't seek out that sort of thing. Because I've had to counsel a couple of people that have lost spouses since that's happened. And it runs the gamut from people that are more like me to people that are completely and utterly bitter and angry at God. And I've had the good fortune to do that. Because I think you need to. So they need people.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So if you know somebody that is going through that, and you know, my wife and I will be married 50 years this June, and for me, our faith has been a key part of that relationship. But I can't imagine being without her. I've heard that one of the things you do after you retire is follow your wife around. Is that right, John?
That's right.
Okay, just want to make sure. Pardon? On the honeydew, that's right. So,
I will say this, to this gentleman here, you just had to put your wife into a home. Was it memory loss or was it more other than?
She has dementia. She's down at Sunrise in the Sunrise Senior Living. We sold our house and we've been married 52 years.
Wow. I honestly believe that the situation he's going through is probably tougher. To see someone and they don't remember you, or
yeah,
don't remember small snippets of your life. Because I've been exposed to that real close. When I first got married, the lady and the husband and wife who helped me and Mari with our wedding, the husband was married a long time, his wife, and she started getting dementia. And she would not remember things. She would not remember him some days. You know what I mean? That's tough to sit there and watch that.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, I saw like about 2 weeks worth of it when Mari was ill because she was on meds and she had anything for about 2 weeks. I only had to go through 2 weeks of it. It was probably the worst 2 weeks of my life. So say a prayer for this gentleman.
Yes, yes, we sure will. And the other thing, too, is, you know, every once in a while you see somebody on the side of the road with a sign up and, you know, your first thought is, you know, he's pulling a game or something. But I've tried to talk to people because and usually give them a little something. But I think what people need more than money is to be valued and to be honored and to be recognized. And it's the same thing if we were at our wit's end and put up the sign. And you know, I can't imagine that the courage it takes to do something like that. And so. Great suggestion to just, you know, and it's that old golden rule, he who has the gold makes the rules. Is that the one? No. It's treat people like you want to be treated, you know, and that's the way we try to run our business. And I think not only does it work, but you see the results of that more than just money. You see people being honored and respected. And especially if they disagree with you. I had a friend of mine say one time that the Bible says to love your enemy, but it doesn't say anything about the competition. So, but anyway.
You know something I heard, though? I heard this business seminar, but it's also something you can keep in your own old roots. Treat others like you'd be treated. What if they're way different than you?
Yeah.
Treat others like they want to
be treated. Yeah, that's good.
That's called platinum.
Yeah, that's good. Good. Well, thank you, David. And yes, sir.
I'm reading a book right now called Blood at the Root. It's by Phillips. He's a New York man. He graduated from Central High School over here. And it explains the history, why Forsyth County had this reputation, what we did. And it's really embarrassing because back around 1911, we had that lynching that caused all this problem. The landowners over in Hall County said, heck to you guys, we're going to stay with our chaparrals. You come over here, we're going to blow you away. So that philosophy didn't go to Hall County. They stayed in Forsyth County. And they wanted to put a railroad through Forsyth County. They said, no, not with that going on. We need labor. We need secure labor. And you've run all of your help away. So we're going to stay away from you. Hall County got all the press because the railroad in 1911
ran from Atlanta to Boston, and it was a boom town. But Forsyth County was left. You ought to read it. It's really good.
Where do you get the book,
I got to get the Home and Books.
Oh, yeah. That's great.
Yeah, and you see names. And for example, they had the list of slaveholders in 1850. They listed names. Mm-hmm. And all these, and how many slaves there are. My gosh. And they just run the Indians out in 1836 with Andrew Jackson. Mm-hmm. So somebody from South Carolina, he was to say, we can get some more land by getting these people out of here. And it's really, really...
Interesting, yeah. And I might say one other thing. The library right up the road here on Post Road is an excellent library. I go there with my grandkids sometimes, but you might be able to find a book like
Blood
that.
Blood at the Root by Phillips.
Great. Have yourself a cup of coffee, and hope to see you in 3 months, the third week of February, and maybe we can get some of the rest of you to talk here. So thanks for coming today. Thank you.